This episode of The Envelope is brought to you by Neon's Anora, winner of the Critics' Choice Best Picture, DGA Best Director, and PGA Best Producer Awards. This award season, the choice is simple. Follow your heart.
People don't even know.
Yeah.
I can go to a party and be the center of that party, but they don't even know that I'm only there for 10 minutes. But I go in there and I make a great impression, and I do the thing, and I dance, and motor, and then I'm usually like, you know, I gotta go take this call at home, and I go.
Hello and welcome to the season finale of The Envelope. Kelvin Washington, Mark Olson, Yvonne Vidal. And looking forward to this. We got to have some Oscar conversations here, of course, to get to that. And with that, I'm going to start with you, Mark. We know there are things that kind of lead up to it that we can say there's a trend. There's some, you know, predictors where we can kind of see where this thing is going. What have we heard? What's the latest?
Well, it's interesting, you know, as much as this has been felt like an unsettled, uncertain year. We have had some like precursor awards, and I think things have definitely started to settle a little bit. Somewhat unusually, both the Directors Guild and the Producers Guild gave out their awards on the same night so that people were hustling from one show to the next. And the film Anora won at both of those awards. Sean Baker, the director, won at the Directors Guild, and then the film, also produced by Sean Baker, won at the PGAs. And so it definitely seems like it's funny. Back in like September, if you made a list and said, oh, what do you think is going to win? You would say, oh, probably Anora. I think Anora's looking good. And then we confuse things. We get all topsy-turvy and you get on the roller coaster of award season and we make it more complicated than it needs to be. And we've now ended up back at Anora where we were in the first place.
Right. Just go right back to where we started. I swing to you, Yvonne. Okay, so those are the precursors Mark was talking about. What about just your dream scenario? Maybe it's a film, maybe it's a director, maybe it's an actor, actress that you just say, I would love for them to get a win here.
I'm going to go outside the main categories, if that's okay.
Yes. This is your dream.
It's my dream. I feel for Diane Warren. This woman has been nominated 16 times. Granted, I'm not a music person, so I can't really tell you this song really stands out more than the others. But she's nominated for the 16th time for her song The Journey on Tyler Perry's The 6888. And I just feel like, give her the due. Like,
she did get an honorary Oscar a few years ago. So she has a statue.
My dream, Mark.
It's also a good
layoff. Okay, who's yours?
I think mine actually would be Edward Norton, or a supporting actor for A Complete Unknown playing Pete Seeger. Because doesn't Edward Norton seem like one of those people that, like, he should have an Oscar?
Yeah.
And he's been nominated before, but it just, and also personally, I'm a big fan of the motion picture A Real Pain. I like the actor Kieran Culkin in A Real Pain. I get annoyed when people like win too much and like it gets locked in too early. And he's like, seen him give the fun speech and everything. And so I think it would, the surprise of Edward Norton, and just like, I would like for him to have an Oscar. So I think that's where I'm going.
I also felt like that performance really just, it was so calm and understated. And I just, he made me leave that film being like, I need to be like that more.
Have you been doing that?
No.
Okay. Well, you still, we got time. It's early in the year.
After the podcast is over, season finale, yeah. I can be calm again.
For me, you all went a little off the beaten path, if you will. Mine is super chalky, but Cynthia Erivo, because... hold on.
No, I'm in agreement.
Excuse me. 20th person who won an EGOT. I thought that would be awesome.
Why didn't I think of that? Yeah.
I'll stay with you. You have, of course, Coleman Domingo, Sing Sing. Got a chance to see that, speak with him when we did a roundtable earlier. He's great. He's awesome. This is kind of a great season for him.
Yeah, I mean, the film follows, you know, a group of men enrolled in a prison theater program, and Coleman is up for lead actor for his performance as Divine G, which is, you know, a man that was wrongfully convicted and really takes on this leadership role in the theater program. He's very much like I was as a kid. When there's a group project, you want to be the leader and really guide people. And he comes into a little bit of resistance there, but it's a really great performance. It's his second nomination for lead actor. The last one was for Netflix's Rustin last year, where he played civil rights activist Bayard Rustin. So it was a really fun conversation. I will say we both wore black, and one of us wore it better than the other. And I think you can guess who that was.
You did it.
No.
Oh, not you.
Not me. Not me. The man can wear, what is it, like the Canadian tuxedo? Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Is it
the jean, all denim, or something?
Yeah, but does it still apply when it's black denim? I don't know.
I don't. I feel like it's typically blue.
It's just
but blue. Don't ask
okay,
me.
Okay, well, he's creating something else because it looked really good. But it was a fun conversation.
He can do no wrong with fashion. Well, here he is, Coleman Domingo with Sing Sing and Yvonne talking to him.
Coleman, thanks so much for joining us.
It's good to be here.
I kind of feel like we're on a Real Housewives reunion. I know you watch Real Housewives. Don't think I don't know that.
You know, I don't watch all of it. I watch like, you know, listen, I'm waiting for Atlanta to come back. Because I think it's one of those things you just like to watch just because you're like, there's always some drama. There's always some she said. And I don't know. It's just a little mindless.
Look, I long for the day where you get the inspiration to develop one of their stories into a motion picture. Because I know you write and direct.
Yeah, but listen, yo, there's enough material. There's always some material. There's material that you wish they didn't have.
Yeah.
You're like, save yourself, you know?
Save yourself.
Right.
Well, congratulations are in order. This is your second consecutive year being nominated for Best Actor.
Thank you.
This is for your performance in Sing Sing. Last year it was for Rustin.
Yeah.
Were there any lessons learned from last year that you applied to how to navigate or maybe enjoy the process this year? Like, I'm going to take up space, or I'm going to go up to Meryl Streep if I see her.
You know, nothing like that. But I think that I think I just naturally try to be present and enjoy the moment and where I am and not let it be about the actual award, if that's strange to say. But like the idea of being feted for the work that you care about and being in the room, being present.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's something I navigated pretty well last year. And this year, I think I'm even more mindful about making sure that I rest and I wake up in the morning, like I say I do, because I wake up early in the morning.
4 a.m., guys.
Yeah, 4 a.m., 4
a.m.
But you know what? That's for me, because that's me time. So before I come out and do all this stuff, I got to just be able to, like, you know, wake up early. Literally, I like watching the sunrise. I go for a little walk around my property.
You break down your boxes to recycle?
I totally broke down my boxes to recycle today because they were all stacked up since like Christmas. So I was just cutting boxes. You know, the most mundane stuff. But also, when you do that, it's like you have something to do at home. I went stop by a nursery and bought ferns because I wanted to plant some ferns. I didn't get a chance to plant them yet, but they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do things like that.
Do you journal?
No, I don't journal.
I always am curious. Like, sometimes I think about the work that I do and the people that I meet, and I'm like, why am I not documenting this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for you too, like, look at all the work you're doing, the people you're collaborating with. Do you ever think, I should maybe write some of this down?
My manager, Brian, says I should keep a journal and write these things down. But I think I have a good memory. And I think because, and now I'm starting to understand why I'm not keeping a journal. It's because I like to be in the moment and present, which is why, like, I'm not someone who documents a lot of things with a lot of photographs either.
Mm-hmm.
I'll think, oh, I should take this and capture this. But because I just want to be present and
be
there and sort of take snapshots with my mind. And I think, and I hope that I can remember everything when I decide to eventually write all this stuff down and these experiences. But I think I like the lens, because I am a playwright, I like the lens of looking back at a moment and it becoming your own in technical color and your own perspective and not the way it felt when you're actually feeling it.
Mm-hmm. Is there a moment that stands out from these past few months in the lead up to the Oscars? I mean, for me, it's seeing the friendship develop between you and Kieran. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's something else for you that stands out.
I think, listen, that's a highlight. I feel like getting to know Kieran, getting to know Demi, Mikey.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the joy of this. It's like all the new comrades that you meet and you admire their work. You watch all of their films. Because before we did any of the roundtables, I made sure I watched everyone's films. So I can actually, when I see them in the room, I can talk about their work. And so that's been the joy. So I've been doing that. But also it's like the friendships that I established even
before,
like with Bradley Cooper, the people who come out and sort of like stand for you and sort of amplify your work, you know, Bradley, Andrew Garfield. Yeah, I've made some real good brothers and sisters in this industry. And it's nice to see when they sort of, you know, they step up and they just say, hey, I want to tell everybody about your work and the film, and that feels good. So you feel like you're doing it with a community and not just on your own.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know with Sing Sing, there wasn't exactly a script that they approached you with.
No, there was no script.
There was no script. Greg Quaidar, sort of the director, came to you and said, maybe read this Esquire article, or maybe you asked for it.
Yeah.
I'm curious what that's like. I read the article and I know what spoke to me. And I wonder for you as not only an actor, but a writer and director, what is that process like for you? Do you read it through without making notes at first, or do you go back? What is that like?
Well, we made it in a very organic way. We sort of like, I read the article and it really spoke to me, especially the individual stories about these men and how they came to theater, and how theater was doing something for them that was offering some catharsis and some moments of change and true rehabilitation in many ways. And so I thought, I was fascinated by that. And I wanted to help tell this in a film setting, especially when we drill down that it's just about a friendship more than anything. And it's not this prison drama. It's not suffering all these tropes. It's something unique and really showing the possibility of the human spirit when you pour art and love and humanity and light into it. So I just thought that was great. So we did a lot of work on Zoom, actually. We actually got together on Zooms and we talked about what we were interested in. They set me up with Clarence Macklin, my co-star, and we talked about what's interesting to us as men, about the process, about loving Shakespeare. Greg and Clint would go off and write and come back and present some scenes to me. We would read them, talk about the scenes, talk about conflict, talk about how we need to dial things up. You know, Clarence would share things from his lived experience of being, you know, incarcerated, and I would share what I know as an artist and a maker of film and television and theater. And so that's why we sort of created this hybrid and sort of just gave everything that we could. And the cool thing is, like, I was asked to bring more than just sort of like the role of just actor, but to bring all the multi-hyphenate parts of me to the process.
It's been a program that was established to help the population with management skills. And it's turned into something a bit more, wonderful. Because it helps people get more in touch with their feelings and able to process and actually move through and truly get some rehabilitation.
So are you acting at all during this interview?
Absolutely not. I truly hope that you can understand that I've been very sincere. I know how meaningful this is. I would never. Actually, that's not the intention of acting. Acting is just process.
I read about the program.
Did you find any parallels or similarities to what brought you to theater with what brought these men?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about that.
I think I was always a shy kid, and not popular. Come from a very working class family, and. When I found theater, when I was 19 years old at Temple University, just taking an acting class as an elective, it gave me, a place to put, give me a voice, because I don't think I had a voice then. And it gave me, like, some purpose, and you're creating a community, and you're doing something and building together. So with all these skills that I realized I was drawn to. And also, I love the research aspect of it. I love history. I love the deep dive. And so I felt like I found a place for me to where I belonged. And I think a lot of these men found that too. Many of them say that they found it much later than they hoped or wished, because it wasn't offered to them when they were younger. And they say that perhaps some missteps, some mistakes may not have happened if they had sort of this foundation. And that's exactly what I know that, theater can seem trivial to people, or, people standing on stage and emoting in some way. But I'm like, but it does so much for a person. Whenever I would teach, I would ask students to come in and show me their monologue, and then I would redo their monologue with them. And I've had so many breakthroughs as a teacher where I would have this young woman come in and say, give me this monologue. I'm going to do this monologue from Neil LaBute's Fat Pig. Great. And she was a big girl. And I was like, but I met her before, and she was vivacious and funny and interesting. And I was like, why'd you choose that monologue? And she said, well, I think this is the way the industry would see me. And I said, that's interesting because I see you as a queen. I see you as playing Juliet. I see you as all these things. And she cried. I cried. We all cried. And I said, yeah, I said, you have to dictate who you are and find your voice and who you are, not let other people tell you who you are. Mm-hmm. So for me, even as a teacher, and I don't know why I'm telling you this, but as a teacher, I would tell my students, yeah, if I give you skills to be an actor, that's great. But if I give you skills to find your voice, that's even better.
What was that experience like taking that acting class as someone that's shy? I am painfully shy. I used to hide behind my mom at every family function. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. But when I do my work talking to people like you, I feel like I'm wearing a mask, like mm-hmm. I'm a superhero, and it allows me to do it.
Yeah.
What do you remember clicked for you in that class where you're like, oh, this is unlocking something for me?
I think there was a sense of play, first of all, mm-hmm. where we were sort of, I remember we were rolling around on the floor and being silly and being open and using our imagination and doing it together. Like that was required. Mm-hmm. Like it shows that in our film Sing Sing. Mm-hmm. It's required for you to be silly and vulnerable and weird mm-hmm. And pretend. Mm-hmm. And I think to be afforded that possibility, I think it unlocked that part of me where I feel like, oh, I am more than what I seem to people, I guess. Mm. You know what I mean? I guess I am as interesting, I guess, as my parents would believe that I was, but I was sort of locked and shy. Mm-hmm. And so it unlocked something. Honestly, I think I know that there was the person before, because like when I was in high school, no one would ever believe that I'm doing what I am. Uh-huh. Doing now, ever. Uh-huh. Because I was very shy. I was on the school newspaper. Every picture of me in my high school yearbook is like hiding behind glasses and a thick sweater. And then...
That's still me today. From,
right. Okay. But so I feel like I'm a reformed introvert.
Okay.
I feel like I know how to do it. I know how to... Like,
play
at home,
the part.
Yeah, but at home, I'm pretty quiet, actually. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think I am. I'm pretty quiet, and I'm always in my office and reading and doing other things mm-hmm. because that's the introvert. Mm-hmm. And then, but I know how to dress it up and get out there now because I knew that that's also something I needed to learn mm-hmm. how to do. My best is when I'm in a large environment and just being one-on-one with somebody. Mm-hmm. Then I feel more like myself. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like feels like a mask that you have to put on.
Yeah.
You know, to navigate this world, I think. Uh-huh. It's useful.
It's weird too because people will think, is this really you then when we're out doing what we're doing? Mm-hmm. Or is this a facade? But it is just this like different side of you.
Well, the funny thing is people always think that I like to be out all the time. Uh-huh. And I actually don't.
You want to be home watching Housewives.
Well, it's funny. I think I have a limited bandwidth for a lot of, what can I say? I can go
chaos?
To maybe that's it. I can go, but look, people don't even know.
Yeah.
I can go to a party and be the center of that party, but they don't even know that I'm only there for 10 minutes. Yeah. But I go in there and I make a great impression, and I do the thing, and I dance and motor, and then I pull the Irish goodbye, okay. And I'm out. People never know when I leave.
Love that.
Exactly. I'm usually like, you know, I got to go take this call at home, and I go.
Uh-huh. Well, in Sing Sing, you play a prisoner at Sing Sing Correctional Facility who's, mm-hmm. you know, really taking on a leadership role in this theater program. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it incorporates the lives of real prisoners. Your character is based on a real alumnus of the program, John Divine G. Whitfield. I'm curious what that experience was like. Like, what questions were they asking you? What questions were you asking them? And how did it enrich you as a performer when that time was over?
Well, the beautiful thing is that we all made a decision to make it very organic. So it mm-hmm. was never any real questioning, but real getting to know each other. Mm-hmm. And I think we were enriching each other just from jump, from our Zoom meetings. You know, I think in many ways, I'm like, I thought it was so admirable what they were doing and the work that was laid out in the Esquire magazine article. And when I got to meet them, I was like, I just wanted to meet them where they were. I didn't want to ask what they did or how their lives were inside. Mm-hmm. That wasn't actually important to me. I wanted to know who are they now and what are they willing to share just by getting to know me. And I feel the same way. I told them what we were interested in, just the way we would mm-hmm. get together when we first have a coffee and we mm-hmm. were just talking, get to know each other. So I feel like we just formed a brotherhood and a bond pretty quickly. And I know that I had to establish sort of, an environment where I knew that where they can thrive. These are grown men who are being thrust into this film environment who have had minimal experience in this, but they have a love and passion for theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to lay a foundation for them to say, you can play and this can be whatever you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And all it requires is like what the program required of you,
mm-hmm.
which is to be vulnerable and be open. And also something that I was very clear about, and to be tender.
Mm-hmm.
Because whether or not they would say it or not, these guys wouldn't say tenderness was a part of their evolution, but it was.
Mm-hmm.
When you have to stand and be bare in your soul and deal with past trauma, putting yourself and your story into another person's story, it requires a sense of vulnerability and tenderness, mm-hmm. I think. Especially when you're in a very dangerous container like a maximum security prison.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it enriched all of us. I know that I invited my best friend, Sean San Jose, to be a part of the film. He plays Mike.
Okay.
And my other best friend, Sharon Washington, plays the parole board hearing officer.
Okay.
And I knew that I needed love in the room so I can be as vulnerable as possible. I knew that they would have an effect on the rest of the cast, as well as Paul Racy, who was these are the only four professional actors in there. I knew that we had an opportunity to share what we know and share it with people who could be great beneficiaries of it. And I know that we're beneficiaries of what they share with us. I did this because of their work.
Mm.
I didn't do this for myself. I did it for them because I wanted to tell their stories and highlight what good work is possible to the people who are incarcerated. When you find programs that help you and help you heal, whether it's gardening or photography or art.
Being on the front lines of the wildfires.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me that like I feel like everything is in concert with one another. I love the fact that their stories are being told. You're mm-hmm. like, hey, do you know who's fighting these wildfires, who's helping us out? These are folks that most people have put away and out of their mind,
mm-hmm.
and they're actually the ones who are out there to do the work, and now we just have to make sure that they're properly compensated,
mm-hmm.
and there's a path,
right?
A pathway to when they get out, they could have a place in our society.
Now give them some love, give them some love. All right, that's it. All right, now what's your emotional state? What's underneath that?
Mad as a mother.
Okay, no, okay. Anger is the easiest thing to play. Am I right, Brett?
Too easy.
What's more complicated is to play hurt. That helps you name the thing, all right? Now try that. All right.
From the top.
There you go, Brent.
How transformative is that experience, especially for you? You're in this real moment in your career, and to be working with people that approach their work for such pure reasons, was it... How illuminating was that for you of, like, remembering why you do what you do?
What a great question. I can't forget because I think I come from a very humble place. And I just always believe when you do well, you take care of others as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you pass it on. It's not just for me. It's for all of us. I know that I represent many communities and many people have poured into me. So I can be exactly who I am. And I don't forget that at all. And I know that like I've established, you know, grants and awards mm-hmm. and opportunities, production companies, because I want to make a difference. And I know I make a difference standing as an actor and a writer and a director, mm-hmm. but I can make it a difference as a producer and or even just somebody.
Person.
Yeah, just a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just but you know, what we do day to day is very important to me. I think that was instilled in me by my parents,
mm-hmm.
which is to make sure that your life was a life of service. Mm-hmm. I try to inspire other people to know that that's what it's about, especially, you know, young people trying to navigate or people who are looking at me now who would like a career like mine.
Right.
You know, I always say, hey, get that word networking out of your system,
yeah.
because it's not about networking. It's about getting to know people and looking after each other. And if you're looking after somebody and they're looking after you, mm-hmm. you all win.
Mm-hmm. Something that's crazy to me, and I hesitate to say this out loud with my editor within earshot, but you shot this across 18 days in between The Color Purple and reshoots for Rustin. And I can't imagine that kind of schedule and intensity. Was the pace of that something exciting and thrilling, or
no, what? Scary.
It was scary
because I've never done anything like that before. I think I'm a pretty measured, pragmatic person.
Uh-huh.
Usually I like to have a proper amount of prep time,
mm-hmm.
Because I feel like that helps me do the work, so mm-hmm. I can actually be liberated in the work. But the schedule just wouldn't allow. And it wasn't even my suggestion. It was the suggestion of my director, because we got to a good draft of the script. And then they said, well, when can we shoot it? I said, well, not the whole other story. I don't know, maybe next year. And they were like, oh, man, because we really think we can get this done and we can do it in a great way. And I said, I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you. And Clarence Macklin Jr., my co-star, literally smiled at me on the Zoom and said, come on, man, we can do it. And so with that sort of innocent, come mm-hmm. on, man, we can do it, and that invitation, I just said yes. I threw caution to the wind. I said, yes, let me, I can, you know, I'm not afraid of hard work, and we'll figure it out. And I'm not prepped the way I think I like to be. But I also was up for the challenge that maybe this needed to be different.
Mm.
And it needed to help me process my work and be a part of the work in a different way. Which is why I know it's probably some of my more threadbare work,
mm-hmm.
because I leaned into that. I'm like, I'm dealing with men who've had the lived experience, so therefore I can't have any gloss or sheen over
right.
my performance
right.
like I probably had with Rustin or Color Purple. You know, the characters with more size
yeah.
and polish in a way. And I thought this requires more grit,
mm-hmm.
and it requires more of me, to be honest.
In the film, the group of actors are working on a time-traveling musical comedy, which honestly looked rather fun.
Mm-hmm.
And insane. So if you were presented with Breaking the Mummy's Code, which is also just a brilliant title, would your interest be piqued as Colman Domingo? And what character would you want to play?
Absolutely.
Would you want to be the Gladiator or Hamlet?
I feel like I would want to have... The funny thing is, I always feel like, it's so funny, I feel like, listen, I've always straddled my career of being a character actor and a leading man, and I feel like the character actors have a lot more fun.
Mm-hmm.
The leading man have a good time too, you got a different weight on your shoulders, but the characters who come in and hit it and do some wild stuff and roll out, it's kind of fun too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure. I feel like I would like to play both.
We both. Don't be greedy. You continue to be a busy man. I mean, you've got the upcoming Tina Fey comedy. I know that you are playing Joe Jackson in Antoine Fuqua's upcoming Michael Jackson biopic. What was that particular experience like? Like, what intrigued you about playing Joe and, you know, exploring that sort of troubled legacy that he has?
You know what? Joe is such a formidable person. And I was very privileged to play him. I wanted to really sort of unpack who is this man who really gave up a lot of himself, to be honest, to pour into his children as he recognized their musical talent and they wanted to start a group. And the conversation was, you want to start a group? You want, because Joe was a musician as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, come on, Dad, help us with that. I'll teach you that, but you have to have discipline. You
mm-hmm.
want to be the best? We want to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on that journey with them. And I think that, you know, he's always someone in our minds of, you know, he's in our minds, he's kind of villainous in some way,
yeah.
shape, or form. But I think that also I want to just examine the man fully and all his complexity. Where he came from, being a blue-collar man, being a family man. There are things that I always want to examine with every character. One is how he loved his family and how he protected his family.
Hmm.
That's where I led with Joe,
mm-hmm.
to find all those instincts of this man, to make him a very complex character and not sort of lean into any sort of tropes from the court of public opinion about him.
Do you feel like that's the most you've transformed physically for a role, or what was?
In film, yes, because I'm wearing prosthetics.
Uh-huh.
And I believe my makeup is probably tinted just a little fairer than mine. And Joe had blue eyes.
Mm.
Yeah.
So did you wear contacts?
I look very different. I look very different.
Sending those selfies to people must have been striking.
No, I would just do a FaceTime to my husband once in a while. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah.
How about Euphoria? Is it back in production yet? It was supposed to be.
We are back in production.
Okay.
I stopped by the studio yesterday.
Tell me everything.
I can't tell you anything.
You've read a script finally, though, right?
I can tell you that we're in production, and it's going to be fantastic.
How was it to be back on set? You can tell me that.
It was beautiful, actually. It was nice. It was actually very calm and kind, and I caught up with Z for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I caught up with Sam, and it was just lovely. It was just another. It just felt like I went back into a lovely work day.
Did you feel like you had to reacquaint yourself with the character? Did you have to rewatch? It's been about 3 years.
I actually wasn't on yet, so okay. I just popped in to say hi.
Okay.
I just popped in to say hi because it was nice. So, you know, I'm just saying, we've really been a family,
mm-hmm.
and I just wanted to pop in and check on my family, knowing mm-hmm. that cameras were up.
Because right after you wrap on that is when you start work on Scandalous, right, with Sydney Sweeney?
Yes, but before that I do a movie with Steven Spielberg.
What the heck?
Yeah.
I'm
greedy. Yeah. Yeah, I go shoot this movie with Steven Spielberg, and it's a beautiful cast. Emily Blunt and Colin Firth.
Okay.
Yeah. Josh O'Connor.
And you're not keeping a journal.
No, I'm too present. I feel like I just want to be like in the present.
I want to have your mind, because I feel like I would forget everything in like 2 years.
But see, you know, I think that's also maybe that's also my challenge, because I feel like people always want to document it so much.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny. I feel like I just like being in it.
Uh-huh.
I like to be in it.
Well, such a crucial component to your job has become the red carpet element,
mm-hmm.
and Coleman, the way you show out on red carpets, consistently, like one of the best dressed.
Thank you.
That's why I was worried coming here today. I was like, I won't even try.
I'm wearing like, you know.
Look at the way you wear black and the way
denim.
I wear
it's
black.
Just denim.
So
denim.
Different.
Just denim and some Oxfords and a simple shirt.
But I mean, you talked earlier about like being sort of an introvert and a shy kid. What has this element to the job unlocked for you? Do you see it as working in conjunction with the way you present yourself on screen, or is it a totally different side of your creativity?
It is totally in conjunction with it, because I feel like it's all storytelling. Mm-hmm. I think it's a way to express yourself. I think, you know, I grew up wearing my older brother and older sister's hand-me-down clothes. Mm-hmm. So I think that there was something about that once I got my first job at McDonald's and I wanted to buy my own things, I think I wanted to have, what is my sense of style?
Mm-hmm.
How do I wear clothes? How does this body feel?
Mm-hmm.
Out in spaces. So for me, it's part of that dressing up that introvert that is that can tell a story with his body.
What was that first item of clothing with that McDonald's paycheck that really you were like, I got this?
Two-tone jeans.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, because they're hot then. Yeah, exactly. We're talking about the 80s.
Okay.
So there were two-tone jeans. I remember they were stonewashed on one side and blue on the other.
Oh, nice.
Absolutely.
You can do that again. Yeah. Have you started thinking about the...
Maybe I'll rock something like that for the Met Gala.
Okay, I was going to ask. You're on your co-chair.
Yeah.
They just announced the theme. You want to talk a little bit about being a part of this and the theme itself?
Yeah, super fine. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Tailoring black... Was it tailoring the black dandy? Something mm-hmm. like that. Somewhere around there. But it's fantastic. It's really looking at the history of black male tailoring,
mm-hmm.
which is awesome. It's never been done before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just really excited. I'm excited about all of it. I'm trying to think. I'm working right now with Valentino. I'm a house ambassador for Valentino. So Alessandro is going to design something really special for me to wear.
Oh my God.
And I feel like I want to do a couple outfits. So we'll see what happens.
Have you started thinking about the story or emotion you want to evoke with your red carpet for Oscars?
I have, actually. I feel like I thought about a color. I won't tell you the color because it'll be a surprise.
Okay.
But something about it I just can't stop thinking about. And I'm trying to think of history. And I want to. There's so many moments, iconic moments in history, whether it's, you know, it could be like 18th century London, or it can be like the 1940s and zoot suits, or it can be like, you know, some Dapper Dan style or something like that. But I feel like I want it to represent many people and many things. Because even when I went to the Met Gala last year for the first time, I've referenced Andre Leon Talley and Chadwick Boseman. I always want to bring, maybe that's it. I feel like I always want to bring other people with me. So it's not, so I think maybe this
you
is
can bring me
maybe,
with you.
But I think maybe, I'll bring you with me. But I think maybe this is my lesson for shy people.
Tell me.
If you think there's more people with you than just you, then it's not about you anymore.
That's true.
Maya Angelou said something like that. When she says she stood on stage, she says, it's not just me, it's all my ancestors, all these other people giving me strength and courage to speak.
I like that.
You know what I mean? So
I like
then it's
that.
Not just about you. It's about them.
Well, now I'm really looking forward to what you're going to deliver on that red carpet.
It's going
to
serve.
It's going to serve, I have no doubt.
Slay.
But congratulations, and I'm sure you'll probably be in bed by 9 o'clock the night before, right? So you could get up at 4.
Yeah.
Put me to shame.
Totally.
Okay. Well, it was a pleasure speaking with you. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks so much for joining us here on The Envelope. We'll be back later this year with a season of The Emmys.